right. My closet is the door to hell.
The necropolis. A porthole to the necropolis. It had to be on the south side of the apartment.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to a lovely Sunday evening here in Mid-Missouri. And you know what? We're nowhere near a FEMA drill.
Yes, we're thankful for that. It is really, really hot outside, but at least here in the bunker.
A FEMA nice drill would almost be welcome here. It would be something new around here because It's a little slow here in Columbia. But you know what? The St. Louis area, the Metro East, which is actually the Illinois side of that area, had a whole lot of action going on for the last few days.
Yes, and continuing on for the next three. It's a six-day drill, the largest in the state of Illinois' history.
It's ending on what day? August the 8th?
I believe that is correct. It began on Friday, which was the 4th. So 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Actually, 8, 9.
Oh, 8, 9. Okay, yes. Well, I was wondering because Tuesday, August the 8th, would be a hidden triple play 8-8-8.
Actually,
because 2 and 6 add up to 8.
No, I am correct. So it's 4 and then 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, no, 8-9. Okay, so math was not my strong suit. So,
oh, but, honey,
8-9's close.
What's a day between friends?
That's right. And I guess it depends on what time zone they're basing their calculations on.
Yeah, it really
on.
Does. Well, apparently this was called Operation Prairie Thunder, which
Prairie
to me
Thunder.
Sounds like, you know, a hydroplane race somewhere in the middle, the Midwest. But no, indeed, it was actually a drill centering around chemicals that weren't supposed to mix.
Yeah, the drill is centered on a rail yard just outside Edwardsville, which is east of St. Louis, about 15 miles or so from downtown, just east of East St. Louis.
Not far from the Mississippi.
No, close to the Mississippi River. And the drill was based on chemicals released there that would cause a mass evacuation and injuries. And sheltering required. Evacuees would be picked up and then housed at a local middle school. And, you know, I was saying it was a six-day drill. Actually, it is a five-day drill. So it does, in fact, end on 8-8.
Uh-huh. 8-8 of 2006, which, of course, is 8-8. You know, we discovered while we were researching this drill that took place that Peoria, Illinois, has a lot to do with anything that may happen in the state of Illinois, of course. But it's because it's a CDC repository.
Yeah, the Strategic National Stockpile.
Not expository or...
or suppository.
Or suppository.
Although there were some from Peoria. We won't go there.
No.
It's the
Peoria
fault of that.
Is a nice town.
Yes, it is. And that... Yeah. I liked it. I lived there for several years.
I know you
Peoria,
did.
So.
It's a nice town.
Yeah. But it is the home of the Strategic National Stockpile, which is a reserve of emergency medicines that can be flown from Peoria to anywhere in the United States within 12 hours in the event that local medicines would suddenly run out for whatever reason.
Including flu.
Vaccines. That is one of the things that they mentioned about this SNS. Now, why it's located in Peoria, I don't know. Peoria has an airport, but it's not, you know...
It's just a little regional airport, like Columbia has. We have a regional airport.
Yeah, Peoria's is a little bit bigger, but still, it's not... you'd think this would be something that they would put in the Metro East, where you've got Scott Air Force Base... And then you've got the Mid-America Airport, which is an airport that was designed to handle overflow from Lambert Field, which is in St. Louis, and possibly to take over for Lambert someday because Lambert is surrounded by subdivisions.
Exactly.
And so you can't expand it without knocking out a lot of houses, whereas Mid-America is fairly close to downtown and is surrounded by fields. The point is that you could fly a lot of planes out of there in a hurry, and especially with Scott Air Force Base right close, because that's...
Exactly. So Peoria doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Right, right. It seems to me that, you know, Peoria, former home of the former majority leader in the House, Bob Michael, you know, back when the Democrats had the Speaker, Tip O'Neill, back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Michael was a congressman.
Back in the good old days.
Right, right.
Tip O'Neill, how I miss him.
So that may have something to do with the fact that Peoria got that perk from the CDC. But we digress. This five-day drill is still in process as we record this on the 6th of August, 2006, and will continue for a couple more days. And again, it's a test of a mass evacuation just outside St. Louis, based on a theoretical chemical release due to a terrorist attack in the St. Louis metro area.
And we bring this up because, you know, when there is a drill in place, first of all, look for Rudy Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
If he's there, run.
Yeah.
Because he tends to show up where actual events, real terrorist attacks, or so-called terrorist attacks, we won't go there. But anyway, they 7-7 over in London. Of course, he was in New York, and he was also was he in New Orleans?
No, I don't think he was.
No, but he had a ticket there. I know he did. Well, you know what? It is not a drill over in Israel. We all know that that this has been going on for 3 weeks, 26 days, in fact. And today, Sunday, August 6th, was a tremendous barrage of six. You could see them. Mm-hmm. Over and over again on Fox, they were playing the footage. Six rockets that were just blasted off from Tyre. And they landed in Haifa, or at least five of them did. And there is a lot of damage. Buildings down. It's the kind of thing, frankly, that happened in Cana a couple of weeks ago. So this really is not just an offensive. This is a war.
It really is.
It's just another phase of a war that's been going on for decades, perhaps centuries.
Right. It is a. It is really gone to a shooting war. And one of the things that Israeli military strategists are finding out is that they're not fighting a ragtag group of poorly armed agitators. They are fighting guys who are armed with some pretty high-tech weapons for a group that's supposed to be just a militia.
They are. And actually, you found out something really interesting about this. You and I were discussing this and how Israel has taken out a lot of the infrastructure up in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they have taken out the roads that lead over to Syria.
Right.
The whole point being that Syria cannot arm Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
However, you found out something really interesting.
And a second reason being that they want to make sure that Syria doesn't start rolling tanks in on their flank while they're busy with the pockets of Hezbollah fighters. But
that would be bad.
Right. According to Debco File, which is a good intelligence source, obviously pro-Israel, but still, they do report things that don't always filter through to the mainstream media. What they are reporting is that intelligence sources in the Israeli military are saying two things that are significant. And first, related to supply of Hezbollah, that they are being fed rockets through ancient smuggling paths through the Lebanese mountains. That, in fact, they think that these short-range rockets, anyway, these Katyusha rockets, are coming through on the backs of mules because the Israelis have blown up the roads.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way they can get through are these hidden pathways leading through the mountains that are getting to the Hezbollah fighters. Now, the second thing that the Israeli military has discovered, which is more ominous and isn't really being talked about a lot in the mainstream news, there are some people who have mentioned it, is that Israeli intelligence officers report seeing Iranian Revolutionary Guards fighting alongside mm-hmm. the Hezbollah fighters on the front lines.
Exactly, and I think this is something that we're not seeing discussed a whole lot. I have heard sideways references to it
mm-hmm.
From a few talking heads. Essentially, what is happening, folks, Iran is fighting Israel by proxy.
Right. This is a war taking place between the West, primarily the United States, mm-hmm. and Syria and Iran.
Yeah, and I'm glad you put it that way, the West, because some might say that Israel is the proxy for the U.S.
Exactly. And what there was an interesting piece by Sidney Blumenthal, who was a former official in the Clinton administration and who writes a column now for Salon Online and gets published elsewhere. I always thought of Blumenthal as kind of a weasel myself, but in this case, I tend to agree with him. I think that he is right when he suggests that the neocons within the United States government are pushing for this to elevate to the next level. We saw, and we talked about last week, I think, the voices within the administration that are very critical of Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she's been called flat out incompetent by someone, you know, by Newt Gingrich, Richard Pearl, and so
on. You and I were talking about this yesterday or earlier today, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't look for her to last. I don't, because she's having to deal with the Arab nations, and these men
mm-hmm.
do not want to speak to a woman.
No.
They're not going to make any deals that they believe they have to keep.
Mm-hmm. But the neocons' problem with her is that she's trying to come up with, appears anyway, to be trying to come up with some sort of negotiated solution. And the neocons don't want a negotiated solution. And that's Sidney Blumenthal's point. He cites sources that indicate that the NSA is feeding signal intelligence to Israel to monitor whether Syria and Iran are supplying armaments to Hezbollah, and that they are marginalizing Condoleezza Rice mm-hmm. so as to minimize the chances that we actually will get a ceasefire before the war spreads to Syria and to Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They think that we can win, and that with the United States and Israel fighting side by side, that we can defeat Syria, which is probably true. Syria is fighting with some very old weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
Iran.
We cannot defeat Iran.
I don't think so. I think we're just stretched too thin.
Exactly. If this happened prior to Gulf War II, if you mm-hmm. want to call it that, then, yeah, that would have been a different story. We've got an election coming up this fall, and I'm sure that that is way at the top of the list of a lot of people in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be looking at this, boys and girls, and asking themselves, how is this going to play out when I go out and I make my stump speeches?
Mm-hmm. And I think it will really depend on who you ask. I don't think anybody really knows. I think some of on the hardline Republican right, maybe, or just say hardline pro-Israel politicians may think that this is a good thing, and that mm-hmm. their constituency wants to see us get tough with radical Islam. There are parts of the country where that's not going to fly.
Well, let me tell you, Peoria, Illinois has a very high Lebanese population.
That's a very good point. I lived there for several years and was not aware of it at first. I just thought there were a lot of people with great tans walking around down there. And but
Derek's daughter is one quarter Lebanese. Nicole, yes. My lovely stepdaughter. She's mine. She looks just like me. She's got my brains anyway. She is one quarter Lebanese, and mm-hmm. She tans like that. But an amazing, wonderful, joyful population of people.
It is.
Who are of Lebanese descent.
Great food.
But I have to wonder how that sort of typically a democratic state.
Mm-hmm.
Which side do you fall on when your ancestry is your distant cousins are being blown up?
And let's take this into the realm of religion. The people who have emigrated from Lebanon to the Peoria area primarily come from one small community in the northern part of the country called Aitu.
Mm-hmm.
And they are mostly Maronite Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Christian.
Right.
So we need to disabuse ourselves of this notion that, you know, Arab equals Muslim. That's not the case. There are also many Christian Palestinians living in the Palestinian territories. Many, I would say, probably most that are Greek Orthodox or mm-hmm. Orthodox, mm-hmm. But I don't know that for sure. So
there are Jews living in Iraq,
and there are Jews living in Iraq, and there's a Jewish community inside Iran, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's more complicated than we often are told in the mainstream media. The Christians inside Lebanon, inside Israel, inside the Palestinian territories, are suffering just as much as the Jews and the Muslims who live there. It is really difficult, because the Lebanese people that I knew in Peoria, and some of whom I was very close to, mm-hmm. are very, very patriotic. I know of one who is a rather high-ranking officer in the U.S. Marine Corps right now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it's got to be difficult looking at what's happening over there and realizing that an ally of the United States is in there blowing up a country where, mm-hmm. as you say, there are still distant cousins living.
Well, you know what? I'm of Heinz 57 extraction. I've said before I'm Melungian, which is, you know, if you want to know what that is, email, because we've talked about it in the past. But a lot of my ancestry comes from Ireland, England, Scotland, Germany, some from who knows where. You know, it's just this odd mix. But I feel a real kinship towards Scotland and Ireland. And, you know, because my mother always claimed that she was half Irish,
mm-hmm.
Or at least half. So I grew up feeling very, I'll tell you what, if the United States started bombing Ireland, I'd have a tough time with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm how many generations removed from that?
Well, your ancestors have been here for 300 years. Yeah. It is really an odd situation. And what's disturbing is not just that Israeli military spokesmen, attachés, were briefing American politicians about the battle plan that they intended to use a year ago. That's what you pay your military for, is to be prepared for contingencies. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sure we have contingencies in place to react against countries we would never expect to fight. But that when you look back 10 years at the neocon manifesto for how to rearrange the Middle East and see that things are progressing there the way that plan was drawn out, mm-hmm. then you have to be concerned. There was a document written about 10 years ago, 1996, called A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm. The authors include Richard Perle, Douglas Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense, David Wormser, Dick Cheney's chief aide for Middle mm-hmm. Eastern policy. It was written at the request of Benjamin Netanyahu, who was the incoming prime minister from the Likud party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was intended to provide a new set of ideas to get rid of the policies of the former prime minister, Yitzhak Rabin, who, as mm-hmm. you remember, was assassinated.
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked about that in the past, too, and there are many questions surrounding his assassination with regard to certain well-known names that we're not going to go into now. It's interesting that the most recent head of the Likud party is mm-hmm. still
Ariel Sharon. Yeah.
I know.
And he's still alive.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There was an article I saw about a week ago that said his condition worsened. Worsened? How could it be any worse?
I know.
So I
don't know.
Yeah.
I do think, I think that politicians, those who are in the know, those who are Richard Perle and the insiders, the neocons, and those on the other side, because this is two-faced. This is two-faced, folks. They are trying very hard to keep Americans distracted. Those and frankly, I think that there is a sense of let's allow Mr. and Mrs. America out there to feel as if they are very involved and informed through the 24-hour news sources.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get them so focused on the news of the day that they don't put together that big picture.
Right. Right. That's very true. It's like somebody once described USA Today, which when it appeared on the scene, sort of developed a new style of packing a lot of stories into very condensed single or dual paragraph form.
Big color pictures.
Yeah, with big color pictures. Somebody described it as McPaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the implication that it was to journalism what McDonald's was to cuisine. And I think that's what we get on the 24-hour cable news channels, even the talking head programs. Unless you're watching something, you know, of a long-form nature, like on C-SPAN or, you know, sometimes PBS,
mm-hmm.
what you get is McNews. It's one or two headline stories that are beaten to death
mm-hmm.
And, you know, use a lot of video and graphics. How many times did we see that 15-second video clip of those six rockets from Tyre, Lebanon today?
Probably two dozen.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I find that to even be the case in listening to radio, because, you know, obviously now with my new job, I have to listen to our station.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm listening to a lot of talk radio and big name talk hosts who tend to get on one or two topics and then just pound those into the ground.
As if there are some sort of talking points circulating.
Yeah, yeah. Or, it, you know, it's, or it's as though they know the one or two that are most likely to push the emotional hot buttons, and they'll focus on those.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are other big issues that should be discussed, and there are, again, there needs to be context. We need to step back and look at...
People need a wall of paranoia.
That's right, and that's what we're here to provide for you. And that's
we don't have a new wall of paranoia yet, no. But we're going to get one.
Yeah, yeah, that would be... that would be so cool.
I know. The old walls stand with the house, but we could get a new one.
Yeah. Might be able to borrow the, you know, radio truck or something to, you know, move the new wall of paranoia over.
That would be great. Yeah.
Well, and that's why we'll talk about things like this 1996 document that was written by the neocons, which basically said, we want to go in, we want to either, you know, wipe out Syria or, you know, reconfigure Iraq and make King Hussein of Jordan, now King Abdullah, his son, you know, the king of a new expanded Jordan, to, you know, which would include a big chunk of Iraq. You know, this was stuff that was planned or at least proposed 10 years ago. And we see now things that are happening and that conform to those ideas. And we have to wonder, okay, these guys wrote this document 10 years ago, and many of them are still in very influential positions within the government. Is there a connection there? Well, I don't know. I don't think that's an unreasonable question to ask. I don't think so at all. And meanwhile, there are other things happening behind the scenes geopolitically that need to be addressed, which are being ignored. The big one that we really need to talk about, and I'm glad you reminded me of this because I totally skipped over this on my show last week on the radio, was the test that Russia completed, a successful test of an intercontinental ballistic missile.
Very interesting, is it? And you didn't hear any kind of complaint out of the U.S. about that.
No.
Here's an ICBM capable of reaching the United States, carrying a payload that Russia has been bragging could counteract our defense system.
Right. And a missile specifically designed to deliver nuclear warheads.
Right.
And yet, when North Korea shot off its little pop gun missiles, which we're seeing now in the news today, officials saying, well, gosh, maybe they really did go exactly where the North Koreans wanted
them to go. Well, except for
the
Taipong, Taipodong 2.
Right.
That one is the one that Japan is now saying, no, actually, it didn't go where it was supposed to go. But the other ones
did. The other ones did. When North Korea launched its missiles, there was a hue and cry. But last Friday, Russia tested an ICBM, a successful test, hit its target, and we said nothing. Meanwhile, Russia has, you know, played host to Venezuela's president, Hugo Chavez, and there is word that Gazprom, the official or the state-run gas company, is on the verge of closing a deal, about $3.5 billion deal, to connect Venezuela's very substantial gas reserves through Brazil to Argentina. That is a big deal. There's also a deal from Venezuela to purchase about $3 or $4 billion worth of high-tech defense equipment from Russia. Russia is becoming a major player on the world stage and is making close friends with countries that are not going with the program, not just Venezuela, but also Bolivia. They're making overtures to the Bolivian government, which is not happy with us. That's Evo Morales, the new president there. So what is Putin's game plan?
Well, he definitely has a game plan. Is the oil bourse over there officially open?
I'll have to do some research on that.
Wasn't it going to open this fall?
He was talking about opening it soon, and it may already be open, but I'll have to research that.
He definitely wants to be the energy king. And you know what? He's got people just loving him. When Chechnya comes out and says, we think he should be elected for a third term, look around, because Chechnya, if that sounds familiar to you folks, the Chechen rebels have been fighting the Russians for a long time.
And you remember it was the Chechen rebels that caused that problem in Moscow, where they wound up gassing the people in there in this theater.
In the theater.
And overdosed and people and a number of people.
Were they Chechen rebels?
They were Chechen.
Who took over the school? Or were those...
That was a different breakaway territory whose name is escaping me. It's Osinia, or
it wasn't
Chechnya, but there are a lot of hard feelings between the Chechens and
Putin
Russians.
Putin is making all kinds of deals with China and with Syria and Iran, as you said. He really does see himself as outlasting the other players on the board.
Right.
Tony Blair's on his way out. George Bush is on his way out.
Yeah. And yet in Russia, talk is being floated of changing the Russian constitution to allow him to run for a third term. Just like in the U.S., the president can only serve two terms according to their constitution. And the proposal... or the idea is being floated by the parliament in Chechnya, which is really significant because that's one place you would think they would hate his guts. He's also taken steps to break up Yukos Oil. Yukos was a huge company. The former head of Yukos, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, is now in Siberia.
Yes, Khodorkovsky, who is a big buddy with the Rothschild family.
Yes, yeah, it was... we won't delve into that conspiracy.
That's a long story from the Board of Paranoia, but...
Yeah, go back a couple of years, but Khodorkovsky and Lord Rothschild were hanging out together. It's like, oh, they share a love of art. So that company has been broken up. The natural gas branch of Yukos Oil was sold off about a year and a half ago. It was December of a year ago, December. And the company that placed the winning bid and bought it basically for, you know, pennies on the dollar or on the ruble was registered. Their address was the address of a cell phone store in a small town about 200 miles from Moscow. And it was a pretty thinly veiled cover for the Russian government. So Russia, you know, now has, you know, they folded that division of Yukos into Gazprom. And now they've got Yukos Oil, which they're going to take over, which is going to make Russia a huge player, you know, on the scope of the scale of ExxonMobil.
Huge.
And, the world
and
energy
you know,
stage.
I think you have to go back to Russia roots centuries ago. Very isolationist. Woo, can't even speak. It was only when, not Alexander, but Peter the Great came along. Peter the Great sort of pulled them out of that mode of thinking and wanted to be a big player on the world stage. Prior to that, they were just, look, we don't want to deal with anybody. We are Russia and that's it. In some ways, I see Putin as taking another step. He doesn't want to just be one player on the world stage. He wants Russia to be the same sort of Russia is Russia, and that's it. But he wants the world to bow down to Russia.
Yeah.
I think he is trying to outfox the neocons.
You know, I think that's a very good analysis, and I think you're right. He recognized that you have to control energy to play the game the way the neocons are playing it. This is something Stan Deo told us, you know, that he heard from his sources when he was, you know, part of that circle back in the 70s, that oil was going to be the coin of the realm. And that's why, despite reports, which haven't gotten any attention at all in the press nationally, of, you know, reserves possibly equaling what Saudi Arabia has in Montana and western North Dakota. And, of course, we know that there's at least that much, another 300 or 400 billion barrels sitting up in Anwar, that they don't want to, you know, drill. We could, in the United States alone, have something like three times the reserves of Saudi Arabia right here under our control. But the game is not about controlling our own reserves and making ourselves energy independent. It's about controlling everyone else's energy. And the situation inside the United States, however, is that we're dealing with an economy that is way out of whack. We'll talk about that in a minute, about you know, the two different sets of books that the government keeps. Russia, meanwhile, under Vladimir Putin, has paid off his foreign debt and is in a very strong position right now to basically thumb its nose at the rest of the world because it's not vulnerable economically mm-hmm. the way we are.
Oh, very much so. And let me add one more little piece to the puzzle. Recently there was a story, well, a couple of stories, where the head of the Russian Orthodox Church endorses Vlad Putin in various speeches and activities. The most recent one is when is it Alexei II? Is that the
I think that's what you said his name was, yeah.
When he handed over to Putin a replica of St. Ilya's sword. St. Ilya is essentially Arthur. Or you could call him Parsifal.
Mm-hmm.
Or Guinevere and Lancelot.
Lancelot.
He's that sort of on a pedestal, legendary knight slash savior. And it is a replica of the sword that is on St. Ilya's crypt that was given to Vlad Putin.
Hmm.
In other words, Alexei II is saying to the people of Russia, I equate this man with St. Ilya.
That is very significant.
This gives him more than political status. This makes him father of Russia. This makes him the religious leader in some ways, which is the old czarist position.
We need to do some more research and then do a show where we talk a lot more about what's going on with the veneration of relics, saints relics in Russia.
The hand of St. John.
The hand of St. John and how that ties with the dual-headed eagle, mm-hmm. you know, the Masonic symbol. That's the official emblem of Russia now because of the Masonic veneration of, you know, the Johns.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting series of developments regarding Russia on the geopolitical stage, but our attention has been focused on, by the media, mm-hmm. on Lebanon and then sort of orbiting that story, of course, is what's happening in Iraq, and, you know, the situation with Iran and Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, Russia is very quietly making deals with countries like Bolivia, like Venezuela, and getting his country out of debt, taking government control over huge petrochemical companies and resources. And we're going to see some changes taking place over the next 50 years. Assuming we're here that long, if the Lord doesn't tarry. Russia and China are pulling together a group of growing economies in that Shanghai Cooperative Organization, what do they call it, the SCO,
mm-hmm.
Where
mm-hmm.
they just invited Pakistan and India and Iran to become members of this group.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of people involved in that group, and you've got a lot of energy resources involved in that group.
Speaking of Pakistan, lest I forget, they have a nuclear reactor that the United mm-hmm. States just goes, so what?
Mm-hmm.
Why can they have one and Iran can't? Pakistan is the home of the madrasas.
Which we set up, and I think that's the whole point. It gets back to the AQ Khan network. AQ Khan, of course, was the Pakistani scientist who helped funnel a lot of nuclear technology and research to other Muslim nations, including probably Iran, Malaysia for sure, Libya. And when the 70s came around and Russia invaded Afghanistan, we went to Pakistan and basically cut a deal that involved turning a blind eye to what Khan was doing in exchange for Pakistan's support in setting up the madrasas to train the Mujahideen to go into Afghanistan and fight the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that worked, and now our guys are there, and the Mujahideen
and the Russians are there.
And the Russians are, well, yeah, that's right. We invited some Russian mm-hmm. peacekeepers in.
Yeah, remember a year or two ago, we said, okay, we'll work out a deal with you. You get mm-hmm. to come back in.
Yep. And the Mujahideen are still being trained, but according to the way they're being trained, we're just as evil, if not more so, than the Russians. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's come back to bite us. But that's why Pakistan's nuclear program wasn't shut down. We cut a deal with Pakistan. Okay, go ahead. You can mm-hmm. develop your nukes if you'll help us fight the Russians. Well, now we've got the Russians back in, of course, and we got that unbelievable story that came from the UK about the Pentagon approaching Russia to sell us 15 years worth, you know, based on the amount the British Army mm-hmm, uses in a year, mm-hmm. 15 years worth of munitions for the Afghans in case we get a Democratic president in 2008.
Oh, I know.
There's no wonder the Russians laughed when they saw that one come in.
I want to go to that story from India before we leave. We may have a slightly shorter show today. And for those of you who would like to hear us do an interview, we will be planning interviews for the near future. But today is just blather. I'll be honest, I'm not feeling that great today. I may have an ulcer.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, the symptoms seem to match.
Yeah.
And certainly the stress of what we've been going through and the sacrifices that you made so that we could, you know, move here and I could...
I know, and I'm going to just play that for all it's worth. Oh, no, honey. I can't lift that box. My ulcer. No, it's just...
She's joking. She hasn't done that at all.
But we're pretty sure that it can be taken care of with some medication and, you know, just resting and watching my diet. But because of that, I'm not going to talk too terribly long tonight. But we do have lots of plans. And also, before we get back on track, for those of you who have written to me, and I just want to thank everybody who writes to me and asks, where are the next books? Some of you have been waiting so patiently for so long, and I really appreciate that. You know, I honestly am doing the best I can, and this ulcer has nothing to do with that, but it has set me back a little bit to mm-hmm. With the move and everything. So give me a little more time and a whole lot more ice cream. You know, ice cream helps.
Yeah.
Sort of melty ice cream in very small doses.
Yes, and we found a good source for ice cream earlier today, and a good place for frozen custard in case you want that ice cream doctored up with.
I don't think I can take any of that. I'll tell you what, there aren't too many things that I can stand right now. But anyway, back to the news. We want to get back to, and like I said, I have a story from India that I want to make sure we bring in. But back to the whole Pakistan-India cabal and why we're allowing Pakistan to keep their reactor and mm-hmm. not complaining about this and that and Russia. There's so much to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to it. And again, I think that the American, you know, people, good, honest people who are trying very hard to stay abreast of what's going on in the news, especially those of us who are junkies mm-hmm. as far as the news goes, and we watch Fox or CNN or whatever, 24/7, 365, and we're sure that we know what's going on. But the fact is, it was the reason that those rockets were shown over and over and over again.
Right.
We want you to think about today's news.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep.
Don't connect this with anything else. Only connect those things that we tell you where you can connect.
Yep.
Thinking for yourself.
The only dot we'll let you connect is where those rockets came from, which is probably Syria or Iran, which is, of course, where Sidney Blumenthal and we think, ultimately, the neocons would really like to see this conflict extend. And we talked about this before, and in the time that we have, we won't go into it again. But one of the reasons that we bring all of this up and tie Russia into it and Russia's emergence on the national, the global stage, and China's partnership with Russia, or what appears to be at least friendly overtures between those two nations, is that anytime you've got all of those nations involved in the machinations behind the scenes with what's happening right there in the Holy Land, mm-hmm. there are prophetic implications there. And in the space of, you know, this 1 hour or 40 minutes or however long we talk tonight, we're not going to resolve those issues, but we're just putting it out there.
We won't?
Not within the next 20 minutes. They've been arguing about this stuff for 2,000 years.
If we go an hour 10,
we'll... Well, if we just do the USA Today version, one paragraph.
I know. Well, let me do a left turn because you're right. We're not going to solve any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to make sure that I bring up this India story. For those of you who may have missed it, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, you know, a lot of different soft drink manufacturers, but Coke and Pepsi are the two biggies. Do a lot of bottling in India. Well, they're all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a couple of years now, some environmentalist groups have been really complaining about Coke's, the sludge runoff that's coming off the bottling plants, the fact that they're sucking up the water.
They go through a lot of water.
Oh, they go through so much water. In fact, they bottle water over there. You know, I would bet that every listener right now has at some point had consumed some sort of bottled water. It's really good. It tastes great.
Mm-hmm.
Bottled water is a little pricey. Most people living in India mm-hmm. cannot afford to buy bottled water. Farmers can't afford to buy bottled water to put on their crops.
No.
And Coke and Pepsi are sucking up the groundwater.
Right.
They're emptying the aquifers over there, and farmers' fields are drying up. They can't feed their cattle. They mm-hmm. can't, they don't have any kind of yield from their fields. But add to the insult to injury,
mm-hmm.
it is now clear that the Coke and Pepsi products contain pesticides to an insane degree.
There was a study that was done by a government agency in India in 2003 that showed unacceptably high levels of pesticides, and the bottlers criticized the study. A study was done again this year in 2006, just released last week, and it showed that, in fact, the levels of pesticides in the products tested this year were anywhere from 23 to 30 times higher than they were in 2003.
Mm-hmm. So it's getting worse with each passing year. And if the water that Pepsi and Coke uses comes from these really, really deep aquifers,
mm-hmm.
how's the pesticide getting down there? Because we tend to think of runoff as contamination as going into just the shallow groundwater, mm-hmm. not the really deep, deep aquifers.
Right. It does make you wonder. Of course, you remember there was that Union Carbide explosion some years back in India that killed a lot of people and contaminated
mm-hmm.
a large area. But it does make you wonder, what are they doing to the water over there? I mean, what sort of environmental regulations exist in India?
Well, good for India, because they have banned... The government has banned all sale of Coke and Pepsi products in the schools, in the colleges, and possibly everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was a new story that just came out this past week, and the story didn't make it clear again as to what the quality of the water is in India. And again, this just might be something to, this might be related to the quality of their water and some other environmental issues they need to deal with and clean up.
Well, I would like to know what the quality over here is.
Yeah, we can look it up on our city's website. I'm not sure,
Not the quality of the water, the quality of the Coke or the Pepsi.
Oh, good point. Good point. The quality of the, and the problem, according to the article, at least the sense that we got in reading it, was that the bottled soft drinks, canned soft drinks in India have become very, very popular, mm-hmm. especially with younger kids that tend to, gravitate to Western trends. So it's... they've been consuming a lot more of these in past generations. And when they saw that, these kids are consuming many, many times the acceptable limit of pesticides mm-hmm. in these soft drinks, that's why they shut it down.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Going back to something...
Use a Coke or a Pepsi, right?
Just touched on a little earlier. The health of the American economy, based on the numbers that we're getting from the United States government, is a lot worse than what we are being told publicly. See, the federal government, USA Today reports, is keeping two sets of books, which is something that corporations are not allowed to do. This is a set of bookkeeping that would land, Enron in jail possibly. Or, you know.
would land you and me in jail if we had a company doing it.
Exactly right. The government officially reported that the federal budget in 2005 had a deficit of $318 billion. But the audited financial statement produced by the government's accountants, which follow standard accounting rules, show the actual deficit for 2005 was $760 billion. Now, the board that sets accounting rules is considering requiring the government to include longer-term financial commitments like Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to include those commitments into the accounting procedures used by the United States government, the deficit for 2005 would not be $318 billion. It would not be $760 billion. It would be $3.5 trillion.
Ouch, for 1 year?
Yes, $3.5 trillion for 1 year.
Where's that money going?
Well, I don't know.
Does it cost that much to move from Cheyenne Mountain
to Peterson Air Force Base?
Yes.
Well, that could be. There's a lot of $600 hammers involved in that move, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Congress has written its own accounting rules, which are illegal according to the accounting rules set up for corporations in the United States. And based on those accounting rules, they can tell us that the deficit is only $315 million. Now, in fact, if they were to use the accounting rules set for corporations, the ones that would show $760 billion deficit,
mm-hmm.
the budget surpluses that we thought we had during the Clinton years,
mm-hmm.
never happened. Deficits every year.
Oh, you're not telling me that both sides would lie to us.
Shock and awe. Yes, indeedy. The Clinton administration reported a surplus of $559 billion in its final 4 years, second term in office. The audited numbers showed a deficit of $484 billion.
Well, I suspect this is a game that's gone on for a long time.
It probably has. But the scary thing is that 15 years ago, the government realized that its accounting methods were in such a mess that they didn't even know how much money they had coming or going. Nobody
does.
So from 1990 to 96, the government created the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board to establish accounting rules, which are similar to what the Financial Accounting Standards Board does for corporations, so mm-hmm. that they're all playing by the same sets of rules. They added chief financial officers to all of the major government departments. They required annual audited financial reports from all departments and agencies and ordered the Treasury Department to publish, for the first time, comprehensive annual financial reports. So prior to 1990, we don't know. We don't really know. It's only over the last 15, 16 years that we've actually been getting any kind of
news. You guys don't really want to know this stuff anyway. You just want to hear the good news, right? Come on, Cubs win, Cubs win.
That's right. And the scary thing is, again, the Congress can get away with reporting numbers to us that are based on these bogus accounting procedures that you couldn't get away with if you were operating a business and having to report numbers to the Securities and Exchange Commission. So when we hear from the government that things are much, much better than we thought, that things are ticking up, just remember the numbers that they're talking about are not the audited figures coming from the Treasury. These are the congressional numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those sets of numbers don't include Social Security and Medicare. And the argument there is that, well, these are pay-as-you-go programs, and so they shouldn't be counted, you know, the future obligations shouldn't be counted against the budget. Like, well, I think that the people who are counting on getting Social Security or Medicare in a couple of years would like to see those included mm-hmm. in the federal government's books. And
well,
again,
even if you didn't include them, I mean, they're still off by half.
Yes, and we're still way in the hole. I mean, we still last year showed a deficit of $760 mm-hmm. billion. But again, even that sounds better than 3.5 trillion with a T.
Yeah, well, the Russian people are going in your face,
Americans. That's right. One other thing that we should take note of, because I thought this was interesting. We talked earlier about the drill in Edwardsville, Illinois, just outside St. Louis. Coming up in just a week, it's your turn, Honolulu, as the state of Hawaii holds an exercise simulating the explosion of a half-kiloton nuclear device at the entrance of Honolulu Harbor.
Ooh.
And we've talked about this before.
What was the date on that?
The date on this will be August 14, 15, and 16. So next weekend. Honolulu's the place to be if you're looking for some excitement.
Peter, good game. You want to come to St. Louis area?
Middle
Missouri?
Put you up for a weekend just to get you out of the area. We talked about the mock nuclear terror drills in Charleston. There were a couple last year, and then there was one down in Mobile Bay last August. This year, it's in Honolulu Harbor. The exercise is designed to simulate a blast that would result in about 10,000 casualties. The exercise is called Exercise, and I'll mess up the Hawaiian pronunciation here. It's A Kele, A and then space, K-E-L-E, which is based on the Hawaiian for A, meaning hot and fiery, and then Kele, which means impurity, signifying radiation.
Mm-hmm.
The state and federal military commands and emergency responders will be part of this, and it will be coordinated by U.S. Pacific Command at Camp Smith in Hawaii. Just to give you an idea of the scale, a half-kiloton device, it was a 15-kiloton bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima and a 22-kiloton device at Nagasaki. But still, half a kiloton at the entrance of Honolulu Harbor near Diamond Head would, it would cause a lot of damage. And we mention this again just because, as Sharon pointed out early on, there were terror drills taking place in New York City on September 11th of 2001 and in London on
TWA 800. There was a drill going on at the time, the naval drill.
That is correct. So this is a drill that will be taking place next weekend at the entrance of Honolulu Harbor, and we will see what happens. This is one of 15 national planning scenarios drawn up by the Department of Homeland Security 2 years ago as potential weaknesses that we might have that various emergency agencies around the country are having to prepare for. And again, the one in Edwardsville is going on right now, the one coming up next weekend in Honolulu. And we just kind of keep an eye on those just in case. Not to get too tinfoil hat, but apparently the profession of conspiracy theorist is gaining some mainstream acceptance. ABC has a new report out. Actually, it's reported by ABC, but it's an Associated Press story that talks about the Scholars for 9/11 Truth. That was the group founded by a number of university professors who don't buy the official story. Stephen Jones from Brigham Young, who's written that very thorough paper on how there possibly could be molten metal being extracted from underneath the World Trade Centers 3 weeks after the attacks, and going into the potential explanations. Jim Fetzer from the University of Minnesota Duluth and a number of others. And the article is actually pretty balanced. I will put a link to that in the show notes. But it is interesting that, 5 years, coming up on the 5-year anniversary, the mainstream media is taking notice of people who question the official story without automatically going out of their way to portray them as lunatics.
I would love to think that ABC is really starting to take an objective look at both sides, all the issues, and allow the American people, the readers and the listeners and viewers, to make up our own minds. My fear is that as we approach the elections, that this sort of issue, the tinfoil hat crowd, could just be another means to discredit George Bush and his party to potential voters.
Right. And that's...
But the fact is, George Bush's side is not the only... Everybody.
Right.
There are politicians of both stripes
that are involved in this.
In this and many other things that have taken place that have an awful lot of question marks hanging over them.
Right. And that is why when you listen to us and you hear us talk about one party or another, bear in mind that we believe that behind the scenes, the two major parties of the United States are cooperating
mm-hmm.
on the big issues.
Mm-hmm.
They keep us distracted, fighting about things like homosexual marriage, abortion, stem cell, embryonic stem cell research, mm-hmm. things like that, which isn't to say that those aren't important. It's just that on the big issues like our foray into the Middle East, they're cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see little bits and pieces of evidence if you look around for that. For example, 400 signing statements issued by the President of the United States over his first 6 years, more than 400, saying, I'm not going to enforce this part of this law because I think it's unconstitutional. And 6 years into his term, and now we're just starting to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Where were the Democrats on this the first time he issued one of these?
Well, I don't know. But you know what? We have talked nearly 55 minutes. And I have to say that when we began this evening, I really thought I'd be good for about 15 or 20 minutes.
So I know.
I'm praising God that we've been able to make it through this. But, you know, the fact is that when you and I start talking, usually we don't know when to stop. So it's a good thing we have that clock up
missing
there.
Time. Are you sure?
I don't know. By the way, if you missed this big story, and I hate to bring this up toward the end because we don't have time to discuss it, but the Weekly World News has reported that a judge who, handed down a sentence upon a couple of local witches, got them pretty mad, has now been turned into a guinea pig.
Yes, and when asked for a comment, the judge replied, "Weep."
Seriously, Weekly World News, if you just really need a big smile, pick it up. It's the newsstand. It's one of my favorite reads.
Yes.
Now and then. It's got a couple of stories in it that just made me laugh right out loud today.
Mm-hmm. Home of Bat Boy.
The picture of the guinea pig in those black ropes is well worth it. We may have to scan that in and put it up on
their
website.
Yeah, we may find it at their website. Well, anyway, yes, we have talked, and hopefully we've made you aware of a couple of things that are kind of floating beneath the radar. And if there are things that we didn't talk about that you find significant, let us know. Send us a note, radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Well, another Sunday evening. We'll be back. We believe we're going to continue this on Sundays if we are able to establish interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And we really do want to continue that because there are lots of people that we've interviewed in the past that we want to bring back and talk about the various things going on in the Middle
sure.
East and elsewhere. And some other people that we have yet to interview and people that we know you're going to enjoy. We made those plans before we left, found out we were going to be leaving St. Louis. We had it all planned out for the next 6 months.
That's right.
But all of that has kind of gone awry, and we trust in God for that because you know what? His plans are the best ones.
That's right.
So as far as we know right now, we'll be here on Sunday evenings, and when we do have an interview, we will sometimes post it as a special.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep checking back at PIDradio.com, you're going to find out the newest and the best news that we have to offer.
And, of course, the news of the day that is often under or unreported by the mainstream media. Make sure you check out WatcherMagazine.com. Sharon spends a good chunk of time every morning searching for those stories and does an amazing job. It's one of the primary resources I use when I go into the, yes, it's my way of subverting the mainstream media from within.
Where does he
when
get
I go on
those
the show.
Stories?
Yeah. In fact, I had a couple of calls last week, people talking about what I call now the daily intelligence briefing. Said, that's really great. I really like that. So, little do they know.
Yeah.
it comes from the bunker.
Indeed. You know, if you haven't yet heard Derek, you need to listen to him live at this point, but they will be podcasting eventually. It's 939theeagle.com.
Mm-hmm.
Click on the Listen Now button between 5 and 7 p.m. weekdays, 5 and 7 Central Time.
Which is GMT minus 6.
Yep. Until next Sunday, I'm Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody.
TID Radio.